This morning's address is entitled, Let There Be Light. The Bible is the foundation scripture of the Christian faith. It is at the core of Reformed Christianity, and it is held in esteem by millions of people through the world. Its influence spreads beyond the religion called Christianity. It influences the political life of Western culture. You have the Bible Belt in America that is distinctively conservative in governance. And in Europe, mainland Europe, there are many countries that have political parties that style themselves Christian Democrats. Presidents wear their oaths of office on a Bible, and people give evidence in court using a Bible. And we also talk about Bible truth. The belief in the literal truth of the Bible leads people down strange paths. There are people who dedicate their energies to finding the remains of Noah's Ark on Mount Ararat, or trying to find where the Jews crossed the Red Sea, or trying to locate where the Garden of Eden was situated. And all of those sort of things are completely irrelevant. We remember that the Bible developed in its present format around the second century of the Common Era. For most of its existence, the Bible was only accessible to scholars of Latin. It was the Reformation that gave ordinary Christians access to reading the Bible. It also opened the Bible to scholarly scrutiny, and the Enlightenment and modern science are a challenge to the concept of Bible truth. Many believe that these challenges are so significant that they dismiss the Bible. But we need to take care that we don't throw away something valuable. People have found wisdom there for thousands of years. It's also to remember that until the invention of movable type in the 15th century, that the Bible was hand-copied from then, and that no two existing copies are exactly the same. So it was really open to errors. If we are to benefit from the Bible, there are a few basics we have to remember. It was inspired by the highest motivation. However, it is the work of human beings. They were people of their time, limited by their knowledge and understanding, and influenced by their prejudice. The Bible is riddled with contradictions. And notwithstanding all those limitations and the fact that it has been translated between languages, we remember that it has insights that are useful to us today, provided we read it as poetry with an open mind. It is a big mistake to look for literal truth in the Bible. The Bible is poetry, not science. It addresses the human condition. It explores the gambit of human foibles. And we are meant to read it and ponder it, particularly when we see contradictions. With an open approach, we will appreciate the truth of that Bible adage that says, "There is nothing new under the sun." And the things that bothered people many, many thousands of years ago still bother us today. The Jewish rabbis say you should read and reread the Bible and keep pondering it. Particularly post the Enlightenment, it's very easy to dismiss the book of Genesis. The creation story does not fit with the facts of science. And one of the things we tend, you know, even though we have a very scientific approach to religion, science contradicts a cherished belief in the mindset of Christian faith, namely the fall of humanity. We listen to all the time, you know, human beings are sinful. They were, one time they were perfect, but they fell into sin. That's not true. The theory of evolution is accepted by most Christians now. The process of evolution is ongoing. Humans were not created perfect. We didn't fall into sin. We and the apes share a common ancestor. Our abilities, our intelligence developed over time. So there was no fall from human perfection into human sinfulness. And so, therefore, no need for redemption. And history shows us that the concept of ethical behavior in humans developed gradually. We know from history that people have always offered sacrifices to the gods. In the earliest days, those sacrifices were to ensure the goodwill of the god so that he would look after us in battle, so that he would provide food and shelter. It was a Persian priest named Zoroaster who first posited the idea that God wanted humans to act with honesty and compassion. Until Zoroaster, it was commonly accepted that it was ethically fine. You offered your sacrifices to the gods, and then you went and you behaved as you did. You murdered people for the sheer heck of it. So this was a fresh insight for humans. Zoroaster is difficult to date. Some people say he lived 500 before the Christian era. Some date it back to 1500. Still, he did come up with that new insight. So we have to remember that as well as developing physically, human consciousness evolved and is still evolving. And what about the story of Adam and Eve and that snake? The clue, of course, is in the names Adam and Eve. Adam means earth, Eve means life. The story in Adam and Eve is the story of earth and life. And I have done a service on this where I say, if you read that story as the story of children growing from childhood to adulthood, through the years of rebellion of the teenage years, it fits perfectly. And it's a great way to read the story. One of the things I love about it is that when God kicks them out of the garden, there's a short verse, one line and a half, he made them clothes. And I think every parent who has parented a teenager knows that feeling when you could kill the teenager and they're going out and you say, have you got your raincoat? Put a scarf on you. It just fits in. But I want to look at the consequences for Adam and Eve eating the apple. I want to point out a serious error in the story of Genesis and to find a beautiful insight that we can use today. We begin with the consequences for Adam and Eve. God expelled Adam and Eve from the Garden of Eden. Then they had to work to survive. Then they were confronted with the reality that one day they would die. They were also confronted with the knowledge that their children would inherit this same destiny. And that part of this story has an important lesson for me. When people try to pinpoint the location of the biblical Garden of Eden, it's like the story of the foolish fish. The young fish becomes obsessed about water. He asks everyone he meets to explain water. He wants to know what water looks like, what water tastes like, what water feels like. And of course, this part, point of the story is that his world is entirely made up of water. When we ask, where was the Garden of Eden? We're like that foolish fish. We were put into the Garden of Eden. God placed Adam and Eve in paradise, told them what they should not do. We too were put into the Garden of Eden. Our planet teemed with life in infinite variety of forms. If we use that metaphor of the clock, it's marking the start of time and the beginning of life on Earth. Human beings arrived at 3 minutes to midnight. In those 3 minutes, we have managed to just about wreck the whole thing. And we are constantly warned of the consequences if we continue with our destructive behavior. God told Adam and Eve, don't do it. Like Adam and Eve, we're not listening. We prefer to tune into the stakes, the snake that tells us someone else should do something about this. My behavior doesn't matter. More consumption is good. We listen to the snake that tells us that we'll escape the worst consequences. That it'll be other people in the Horn of Africa who will feel it, not us. We are on the verge of being expelled from our Garden of Eden. And our children, even more than us, will endure the consequences of this expulsion. In our lifestyle, we are like Adam and Eve as they bit into that apple. They tried to avoid the consequence of their action. They tried to hide from God. But there is no hiding place, and there won't be a hiding place from climate chaos. So that's just part of the story of Adam and Eve. I think we can just read that and see how that refers to us today. I talked about finding a glaring mistake, or not finding, noticing a glaring mistake in Genesis. And it's in chapter 1, verse 28, which reads, God blessed them and said, be fruitful and increase in numbers, fill the earth and subdue it, rule over the fish of the sea and the birds in the air and over every living thing that moves on the ground. Filling the earth with 8 billion human beings means that the earth's resources are at breaking point. So we need more than ever to tread more lightly on the planet. But we use that quotation from Genesis to support our right to mine the earth and use it as we will. I did check with Bill Darlison, who's an expert on Bible, and there is no alternative translation of the world to subdue it and rule over it. But to be fair to God, God didn't just say, destroy whatever you like. Our efforts to rule over and subdue every living creature has resulted in mass extinction that threatened our survival. So the glaring mistake for me is that the earth is not to be subdued. We must work as partners, working with the web of life of which we belong. But then the writers of Genesis were of their time. And then the insight I found. One of the chapters in Genesis people love to use to beat up on the book of the Bible in general is that the very opening lines of Genesis said, God said, let there be light. God created light and darkness. But then on the fourth day, he went on to create the sun and the moon. And people say, weren't they so stupid? How could there be light? You know, but 4 days later, the sun and the moon are created. But somebody pointed out to me that another possible explanation is that the light referred to on that first day, first few lines, was the light of the Big Bang that initiated the universe. And that's a possible explanation. But there is something I prefer. And this I heard from the head of the Vatican Observatory, a guy called Brother Guy Consolmagno. He believed that God was referring to the light of knowledge, the light of understanding and wisdom. That God begins by saying, you are going to have light enough to figure all of this out. I will create, but you seek that light to understand creation. And I think that's a beautiful insight, a possible insight into reading that part of Genesis. We can discover for ourselves the wonders of the universe. We can unravel the puzzle of how the universe was formed. We can discover how it works. We can be part of God's creative force. We can stand in awe and feel gratitude. Or we can be like foolish children. We can destroy it all. Adam and Eve were free to make their choices. We are also free to make our choices. But we're all bound by the consequences of the choices we make. And like Adam and Eve, we will find that our children will live with the consequences of our choices. So let there be light. Let us be children of light, not instruments of darkness and destruction. Amen.